Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So today, Stacey Abrams was on The View. And she looks like she's done an about-face on the VP thing. You may remember during a couple of months ago when it was being floated that Biden was talking to her about maybe being a VP choice. She famously said that no, she wasn't. She wasn't going to do it because no one runs for second place. And look, you know, I thought, you know, hey, she's going to go back and run for Senate or governor again in Georgia and all that. Today kind of changed her mind. She said it would be doing a disservice to every woman of color, every woman of ambition, every child who wants to think beyond their own space for me to say no or pretend no, I don't want it. Of course I want it. Of course I want to serve America. Of course I want to be a patriot. When asked again if she would do it, she said, absolutely. Kind of an about face, but not surprising. And I said it back at the time, if someone really offers it to her, she will jump at it. And now she's concerned. She has confirmed it. Now, over the weekend, interesting little tidbit. There was the rumor being floated that Mike Bloomberg was considering Hillary for VP, which, you know, it was a bogus claim. Just a good little story over the weekend. But it got me thinking about, you know, is there a chance Bloomberg's going to be the guy? Well, here to share some thoughts on the Bloomberg campaign, I've asked our good friend Helene Olin to come talk with us. Helene is an opinion writer over at the Washington Post. Helene, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me on.
So you're a New Yorker. You lived under the Bloomberg rule for a while. Thoughts?
Thoughts? I mean, I've always been very mixed about Bloomberg. Unusual for me, I'll give you the positive first. This place is almost impossible to corral. Bloomberg probably did as good a job of doing it as I've seen a mayor do in my lifetime. Unfortunately, some of the issue goes to how he did it. Stop and frisk is probably the most famous. People have calculated that pretty much by the numbers, almost every black person could have been stopped once. Black males, I mean, you know, in prime, you know, teenage to early 20s years, though that's probably not totally correct. People have said that, you know, there was massive suspensions of civil rights in other ways, in terms of pre-arresting people at the convention, the 2004 Republican convention, which there was a huge settlement over eventually. Perhaps something else worth noting, he famously described New York City as a luxury product. In other words, if you can't afford to live here, tough luck. So there's a certain amount of, shall we say, caution here. How about that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I look, he came out with his labor plan over the weekend, and I'm going, if this is what he really believes now, after all those years of not,
Oh, right, he couldn't afford, I mean, I could keep going, right?
Yeah,
I mean, the minimum wage, you know, raising it was not acceptable, that it was a living wage, was, you know, a return to communism. He claimed we couldn't afford various wealth taxes so that we couldn't afford to do universal pre-K. That was enacted within a year of his successor, Bill de Blasio, becoming mayor. I have not seen the wealthy fleeing New York in any major numbers until, frankly, you know, Trump's, you know, salt cap seems to have set some people away finally. So he wasn't really correct about that either. And, you know, it sort of just goes on. And now, of course, he's pretending he's everybody's pal. But whether you believe it or not is, you know, hey, maybe he's had a mid-70s change in life, right?
No.
I doubt it. My mother always told me people don't change.
But change your socks,
she
maybe.
She also said a man born square doesn't die round. That was the other thing she told me.
Yeah, no, but here's the thing. I mean, and I've said this from the start. I Bloomberg's not my candidate. He's not somebody I want to see get the nomination. But if he does, I'm voting for him.
That's how I feel. The issue, obviously, I mean, I've said this before. I'd vote for my dog, or as one of my friends put it, she said I'd vote for John Wayne Gacy before I voted for Trump again. But. Or not again. I mean, she never voted for him. You know what I mean? It's 10 o'clock at night, people. I'm sorry. But You know, the bigger issue isn't politically engaged people like you and me. I mean, I know this sort of sounds crazy to people who are politically engaged or listening to this show, but there's actually a lot of people out there who've kind of put this sort of behind them a little bit. They're not paying as much attention to all of this, to the daily Trump, to the noise of the Democratic Party, to whatever outrage of the day is happening, or in Trump's case, outrage of the hour is happening. There's a lot of people who've kind of checked out.
Yep.
And whether you're going to get them to reengage or not is another issue entirely. And I could see a scenario where you have two, you know, should Bloomberg become the nominee, which I don't know how likely that really is, so I feel like on one level maybe we shouldn't be talking about this so much yet. But could I see a scenario where he becomes the nominee and you just start the sort of fight between two, you know, sort of not nice elderly white guys? I could see where it just starts to become a turnoff. It's very privileged billionaires. I could see where it really becomes a turnoff at some point. Especially to people under 40, who the Democratic Party is going to need, but to other people too. Because as of right now, the economy is kind of okay. It's not great, but it's better than it was 4 years ago, which is really the only metric that matters when people go in and vote. And by the way, if you tell me that's not correct, it's not correct for some people, but overall it is the correct take right now. And you can kind of see a scenario where it just is discouraging. You know, we don't know what the turnout is going to be. Iowa had lower turnout than expected. New Hampshire had much higher turnout. What that means, I can't tell you, and neither can any other political consultant.
Right.
I mean, so we just kind of don't know. But the evidence suggests that people are not quite as enthusiastic about all this as one would hope.
No, I'm right there with you. But I've often said that, you know, the sad reality about our country and especially our electoral system is it's generally the 5 to 10% of the least informed, least educated, least engaged people who decide which way our country goes.
Well, I think it's more than that. I think it's you know, people in a couple of states, right? It's, you actually are in one of them.
Yep.
You're in Pennsylvania. Imagine me in New York. It's lucky there are other people on the ballot. No, I'm kidding. I always vote. I'm really good people. My issues with voting have to do with the New York Board of Elections, which is not always so efficient about sending out absentee ballots.
That's a problem for a lot of places. And here in Pennsylvania, they're actually trying to do something about it.
They're supposedly trying to do something about it in New York, too, but no. I'll see. It happened to be as recently as 2 years ago, so I was not very happy. I think these are real, real issues, and I don't think they're really being properly grappled with. So, you know, in a worst case scenario, you know, it's, you've kind of got this billionaire coming in trying to buy the nomination. Frankly, he's not participating in, you know, the first four primaries, and sort of this deal with the devil. And ultimately, I think there's this sort of assumption of, oh, it's another billionaire, he'll definitely knock out Trump. I mean, you could just as easily see a scenario where you've made a deal with the devil and then it doesn't pay out.
Right. No, that's my fear.
I mean, that's really horrifying. You know, you do a deal with Mephistopheles and you get screwed, right? Like, that's actually a worse outcome than anything.
No, and I said this, you know, 3 years ago. I mean, my concern is who's after, who's the president after Trump, after we've normalized all of the insanity that he's going to bring? This was Inauguration Day. I said, you know, we know chaos, we know kleptocracy, we know all this stuff's coming. My concern is, you know, the next guy after him, after we've normalized insanity, if we get somebody who's, you know, mildly competent and a little smoother around the edges, you know, how bad can things get? And bringing in another authoritarian type, like I think Bloomberg is, could be worse.
I don't think it would be worse, but it definitely wouldn't solve the problem, right? And it would ultimately lead to worse outcomes, because once you go that route, it's very hard to crawl back from that route. And I understand the argument, right? He would be better on climate control. He would be better on gun control. But how much he can do outside of executive order still hasn't been totally made clear to me, unless he's attempting to buy the entire Senate and House of Representatives, too. That's something that probably, needs to be thought about.
Yeah,
right?
Post-Citizens United, why not? Just give him a price tag. I mean, it seems to be that way anyway. I mean, look at the impeachment hearing.
So I think this is still very unsettled. I think any predictions being made at this point are almost, guessing, educated guessing games. And I also think that at least as of right now, Sanders seems to have a very commanding lead in Nevada. So he will, should that hold, he's going to have flat out won two of the first three, and three of the first three if you count popular vote in Iowa and not delegates. And I think it's going to start, looking like somebody's really trying to buy the nomination, and how that's going to play out. I don't see it going very well.
Right.
You could say a lot of things about Donald Trump. He didn't buy the Republican nomination.
No, he bullied for it the old-fashioned way.
He bullied for it the old-fashioned way. He made fun of other politicians the old-fashioned way. He told people what they wanted to hear the old-fashioned way. But he actually didn't want to spend his money on it, which in a kind of sick way was sort of commendable.
Absolutely. No, look, I think he's the greatest con artist that we've ever known. He's a great carnival barker. He's a great pitch man. And, he's frugal. Because he didn't spend as much money, he got tons of free media. I mean, it was remarkable what he was able to pull off. I don't take that from him at all. He's been a horrible president, but I don't take the victory away from him at all.
Right, and that brings me to my last point, and the thing I think people are not giving its due to, and this is where you're going to pick up on the fact I used to read a lot of media theory back in my younger years, is that. Bloomberg might be competent, but he's not particularly charismatic, and that's putting it kindly, frankly. And that matters. That matters. We have not elected the lesser of the charismatic nominees for president since, I'm trying to think, I think Eisenhower might have been the last. I mean, pretty much every contest since. Always goes to the most charismatic, compelling guy.
Yeah, Michael Dukakis wasn't the most charismatic.
Right, and you think about who wasn't charismatic, who wasn't compelling, the first George Bush, but he was up against Dukakis, right? And in fact, so it's something that is in the back of my mind a lot. And that's just an honest reality. And here's what I do know in life. If you could be worth $60 billion, you can't buy charisma.
Yeah, but you can flood the airwaves to where people are just so tired of hearing your ads, though, because I'm almost there at this point. But here's the thing. So you're buying the electricity argument that Kellyanne Conway was making the other day, that it's not about policy, it's about electricity. And I agree with her on this, which is why I think Sanders is the guy, because he has built that movement of people. He didn't buy it. He built it.
I think he's definitely one of the possibilities. I'll put it that way. I think both he and Warren are very strong contenders in that sphere. Buttigieg has the electricity, but he doesn't really have the policy chops. I would say that whether I agreed or disagreed with his policies. He's just too young and callow, frankly.
Yeah. So
I think that other people are beginning to pick up on that. I don't think that's like a minority opinion here at this point.
I did like his comment the other day that if Trump wanted to hang around after the election, he might be able to work something out to do some chores, though. I thought that was funny.
I didn't hear that. I've been trying to take a breather for a day or two. So,
but you brought up Elizabeth Warren, and I look at how is it she? I expected Biden to tank, but I didn't think Warren was going to tank this bad this early.
I actually wrote a piece about this earlier this week. I don't know if last week, and I don't know if you saw it. So, my take on what happened with Warren, and I actually think it's a possibility that she could still come back over this, is that no candidate more than Warren is identified with sort of financial fear, and because that's what she's done, right? She's not a professional politician, or she was not until her mid-60s,
right?
And I think her rise really coincided with this period last year where the economy looked pretty shaky and people were petrified we were about to go into a recession. And her nosedive equally coincides with when that period ended, and people started saying, hey, wait, the stock market's going to record levels again. Interest rates are sinking. Let the good times roll once more. And I think that's a lot of what has impacted her. I'm actually less convinced of the Medicare for All explanation that everybody else is so sort of hung up on. I really think this is more an economic function. And I think it's kind of quasi-interesting to me that she seems to be rising in the polls again in the past week, because I think even as things are looking quite good, I think you're starting to pick up on this level of fear over what coronavirus could do if this turns out to be as serious a threat as it certainly can seem like.
Interesting.
How's that for saying something without panicking people?
I mean,
I think there's real issues. Apple came out this evening and said that they're looking at a hit to their earnings over this.
Yeah.
Global tourism is down significantly. As Matt Stoller will continually point out, not wrongly, that if this keeps up, you're going to start seeing real impacts in the supply lines. It's going to be the downside of globalization is going to hit us in the face. And that's bound to have an economic impact. And I think people kind of quasi know that. I don't think this is like secret stuff. I think this is stuff actually people kind of instinctively get.
Yeah, I mean, if China's going to be the manufacturing capital of the world, you know, when they've got a problem, we all got a problem.
Right. I mean, like, you know, something absurd like 95% of antibiotics come from China. What do we do if it's still closed down in 6 weeks? I mean, and I don't say that to scare people. I mean, that's just something you have to start thinking about, or parts of it are closed down, I should say.
Yeah.
That's something you've got to start thinking about. Like, and I think it's occurred to a lot of people, because I think, as a rule, most of us are hypochondriacs on some level. You know, certainly I can tell you, every time somebody sneezes in front of me now or sniffles, I look at them like, or should you go into the witness protection program, you know, to get away from me, you know,
a woman
got into the elevator with me in my apartment building the other day who clearly had the flu. And I looked at her like, what are you doing?
That's why you should take the stairs.
I know. I was like, I felt like I should have just gotten out. I was like.
But you survived. Look at that.
No, and I haven't seemed to come down with the flu. But if she had coronavirus, it's 2 weeks. I don't think she had coronavirus, though, because there's no coronavirus in New York.
Well, could have been just in your building. Let me change topics real quick here. Today's the 11th anniversary of the signing of the Recovery Act. Trump, was all upset today because Obama pointed out that, he helped rebuild the economy. How fair is it to say that Donald Trump did it all by himself?
Oh, God, this is so insane. I mean, this is, by the way, I felt like telling everybody you're all wrong here. Obama should know, the Recovery Act was too small. And it's one of the reasons we have Donald Trump in office right now. So there's that part.
Exactly what I said at the beginning.
Right. Okay. On the other hand, Donald Trump, could stand to learn a little graciousness occasionally. The economy, certainly did pick up under Obama. It has continued to go okay under Trump so far. Show some graciousness. I mean, one of the really sick things about Donald Trump and what just makes him such a blight and a miasma is that the guy is almost incapable of being gracious, saying anything nice, giving anyone credit for anything. I mean, it's kind of staggering. And it's staggering that over 40% of the population seems to think that this is just perfect, fine, and dandy.
Scary, isn't it?
It's really frightening. I mean, it goes beyond whether you agree with the guy politically or not. I mean, it's just sort of horrible to watch. I mean, really, it's like he says stuff and you're like, why are you saying that?
Yeah, it reminds me of my grandfather always said there are some people who would lie when the truth would be better. There he is.
Right.
But the thing I do give Trump credit for, and I said this a couple of times today, and I've said it before, he's a great pitch man. You know, everything that he does is the best, the greatest. Nobody's ever done it better, and he stays on it to the point to where, the dim and the least among us, they buy it.
Well, when Trump is on, he's on. And he's on in a way that he's got charisma. He's charismatic. He tells a simple story. If you read Sales Theory, which I actually did a lot of when I was working on Pound Foolish, he basically kind of gets it. He identifies, he, you know, finds a fear, identifies a solve for it, and then says he's the only person who can give it to you.
Yep.
That's classic sales 101. And it's shocking how few people seem to get that.
No, I mean, I've said before, the guy could sell a ketchup popsicle to a woman wearing white gloves in the desert. You know, because he's got it. And he keeps it simple, stupid.
He does, which is the other part, right? Nothing gets too complicated with Donald Trump. There are no policy plans. No policy plans. Of course, no. It's all fly by the seat of his pants, but there are no policy plans.
No, that is true. So last question I got, because the economy is doing okay. Do we see, you know, you're the person who keeps an eye on this stuff. Do we see any fears of recession, downturn between now and election, or are things going to be smooth sailing through the election?
If you'd asked me 2 weeks ago, I would have said totally smooth sailing, and I still think it's the most likely outcome. But I do have to say you've got to be slightly concerned about what's going on out of China at this point. To think that this is not going to have some impact is starting to get into delusional territory. Whether that'll be a bad impact or bad enough impact to really cause a downturn, I don't know. As of now, no. But could it get worse? Certainly.
Yay, good news.
Yeah, I mean, that would be my only real caution. Otherwise, I just think Donald Trump's the type of guy who will make sure the economy stays fine through the election.
I know I said last question, but I forgot to ask you about Hillary. Damn, Hillary Bloomberg, or Bloomberg-Hillary ticket.
I don't believe it.
Don't believe it? I didn't either, but I'm against it.
It's a New York Post story. Yeah. I don't even have to be for or against it. It's a New York Post story. That should be the beginning and the end of it.
Well, actually, it was a Drudge story that New York Post picked up.
Oh, that's right. It was a Drudge story. My bad. So, yeah, I don't see it. I mean, gossip is gossip is gossip.
Gossip. Any chance Hillary jumps in?
God knows. I doubt it, but...
You never know. So let's
I joked to somebody today. I said the final joke of this primary season. Well, it will turn out the entire primary will have been the biggest red herring we'll ever know in our lifetime.
Sadly, that could be. But Helene, I appreciate the time, the thoughts. Always fun talking with you. Appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks a lot.
Our good friend Helene Olin. Make sure you check out her work over at the Washington Post opinion pages. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.